Welcome to the Foreclosure Deals Coach Podcast.
The real estate market is shifting. The time is now.
The Foreclosure Deals Coach Podcast is your home for the mindset, tactics, and tools needed to break through your limiting beliefs and find freedom by investing in foreclosure deals.
Don't buy a house, buy a deal. You need to get into this right now.
And now, your host, the Foreclosure Deals Coach, Donnie Corum.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Foreclosure Deals Coach Podcast. I am your host and Foreclosure Deals Coach, Donnie Corum. I am so excited about today's show. Super excited to introduce my guest here, Mr. Tom Lazzaro. But before we get to that, as always, we're going to start with a little bit of mindset stuff featuring none other than the impalpable Dolly Parton. And don't ask me how we ended up with the motivational quote. It must be because you're on the show.
Great.
Great. And she said, a peacock that just rests on its tail feathers is just another turkey. Now, that's kind of funny, but the reason I brought it up is because I want to get into introducing my guest. This is Tom Lazzaro with Performance Plus Realty. Make some noise out there for Mr. Tom Lazzaro. Thank you. Tom's claim to fame here, so let's do a little background. Tell us about yourself. What I do know is you've been in the game for, what do you say, 19 years?
I've been listing REO for 19 years.
19 years and listing REO. So it's a very good guy to know if you're looking to go to foreclosure business. And we talked briefly. You just calculated your transaction count. How many deals have you done over that 19 years?
It broke 1,000 about a year or two ago.
That's insane. Did you hear that? 1,000 deals from this guy. So obviously, we've got a resident expert in the REO field. I want to tell our backstory before we kind of get into yours. We met, gosh, it must have been early 2000 era.
I was going to say 22 years ago.
Yep, 22 years ago. I say it was 2000. I bought an REO property, my first McMansion. I called them McMansions. And the reason I call it a McMansion, this was a 5,000 square feet behemoth over in the Stetson Hills area, former model home, needed a decent amount of work, but connected with Tom as the listing agent on the deal and got this thing for a song. Okay. I still have the property now, so I still currently own this property, but I paid so far under market on it that it completely changed my entire financial landscape. Tom and I became friends as a result of doing that deal. Did a lot of deals down the road from there because I specialized in foreclosures. This was my area. He was bringing in the foreclosure revenue. We generated a hell of a friendship. He's a very funny guy. And we've just kind of been going at it ever since. Is that kind of how you remember?
Wow, that's the best synopsis of our relationship I think I've ever heard.
I'll take that. I'll take the best synopsis. Totally. It was a pretty, and we've been at it ever since. So tell me, go back in time with me a little bit. You got started 19 years old. Tell me about Tom Lazzaro 20 years ago, getting at the REO game. What did you know about the industry? What attracted you to it? Why did you decide you wanted to head down that road?
Well, I'll try to give you the abridged version how I even walked down that path. But, you know, I've been licensed since 2000, so going on 23 years now as a fully licensed realtor. But 4 years into the game, I lost a listing I was supposed to have to the foreclosure process.
Okay.
So I was kind of miffed that I'm like, hey, that was my, you know, deal. I knew the owners and this and that. And they're like, yeah, we did a deed in lieu. I'm like, what's a deed in lieu? I didn't even know what that was.
Sure.
And they're like, we just mailed the keys back to the bank. I'm like, mail the keys back to the bank. You know, who would do that?
Right.
And so I didn't know anything of what these guys were saying. And so I was just, like I said, perturbed that took food off my family's table.
That was money that was supposed to be yours.
Yeah. So then I saw this other broker, you know, listing it. I'm like, she doesn't know anything about this house.
Right.
That was my house. So I get on the horn, probably shouldn't have done it this way, but I got on the horn to the bank. I'm like, I need this listing. This was my house. I know a lot more about it than this gal does. Nothing against her.
Right.
And so he's like, well, do you have any REO background? I'm like, what's an REO? And so this is the conversation that I had. And I'm like, what's the REO? He goes, okay, obviously you don't know what that is. It means real estate owned. And you have to know how to manage a foreclosure property. I'm like, well, how hard can it be? You know,
nobody's living there.
Of course, I was all arrogant about it. Like, I can do it. I don't know what it is.
I'm an expert.
Yeah, I'll just do it. And he goes, now, until you have some REO experience, we can't hire you. The bank, by the way, was HSBC, which they're still around, but they're not as relevant these days. So I spent 2 weeks from that day on researching every bank that owned a note in this town.
Okay.
And I sat on the phone for 8 hours a day and I called every bank until somebody gave me one. I just kept on beating down doors, man. And the first REO I ever had was from Fremont Bank, which doesn't even exist anymore.
Okay.
Based out of California. That was 19 years ago. And they gave me my first one. I remember it was on Bridal Pass up down, you know, Powers in Dublin area.
That street, yeah.
And so listed my first one. And the minute I got it on the market, I called the guy at HSBC back. I'm like, I got my first REO. Here it is. You can look it up and see it's me. He goes, all right. Well, you did what you said you were going to do. And now that original house was long gone.
Sure.
But then I had HSBC as a client for years after that, and then got more and then got more and then joined groups and then networked and just built up. But I never quit trying to build this business 19 years later. You're always working at it.
I love that. Yeah. Incredible story. Now, the takeaway from that is the 8 hours a day of phone calling to all the banks in town. Were you looking specifically for notes that were in trouble? You're looking at defaults, calling the banks and saying, hey, I'd like to list this property. Or were you just calling to build a relationship in case they had one later on?
It was probably a mix. So I did go into the public trustee site
And
then began to look at who the note holders were. Then you have to take the time to find out which office are they at, because one bank can have 500 offices. So,
sure.
I mean, you may have to go through 13 people to even get to remotely where you need to be.
Wow.
And when it came to this guy, Tom, I remember his name, at HSBC, I actually got to him. They put him on the phone. I'm like, I'm talking to the actual guy that knows
this,
which is hard to do. Very, very hard to do.
Especially today.
Yeah. Especially. So you got to take the time. That story is about persevering for what you want.
Yes.
And then, again,
the takeaway from Dolly is that these are your feathers here. Like you're letting your feathers shine. You've got a skill set. You're willing to hop on the phone and put in the work, right? And now here you are nearly 20 years later, 1,000 deals later. You know, how do you feel REO is headed? Here we are in 2023. Like we've had three or four of the best years. I'm going to air quote best years a little bit, right? Depending on your side of the coin, right?
For retail
that we've seen in a while. Now things are slowing down. Are your REO listings picking up? Are you getting traffic? Is it going back to the Tom era? Are you partying again?
Yeah, it's not 2009 yet, but we're working on it. So I have peers and friends in the industry all around the nation. There's some areas that are already being inundated with REO. Yeah. So that is hitting. It is hitting in other pockets, other parts of the nation. I'd have to sit and research, you know,
what city comes to mind? If you're thinking one city that seems like it's
Chicago.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Big time.
Actually, from there, you have some.
I am. I almost got my license and almost began working just to have an.
Yeah, we talked about venue. That. Well,
yeah, and I actually put it on the back burner. I should probably look at that again. But I'm confident it's going to hit here again too.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, in whatever volume. But
how long? I mean, I know the crystal ball's not working. But here we are in 2023. We're 6 months into the slowdown that kind of started in June when the interest rates really took off. Where are we? Another 6 months from the foreclosure crisis here locally? Are we another year? Crisis is the wrong word.
Yeah.
When is it going to get back to normal as far as a normal percentage of foreclosures per capita on deals? What do you think that'll stay?
So my cloudy crystal ball is saying, you know, we still have a backlog from COVID. I think they're working through that as well as what's new that's coming up. So there's that angle. There's also the angle nationwide of, yes, people have had a lot of equity in their home. And I'm sorry if I'm going on these sidetracks.
No,
and everybody's like, we're not going to have a foreclosure crash because there's so much equity. Yeah, but that's what people are living off of right now.
They're buying Corvettes and boats.
Yes.
And like consumerism is at all-time highs, which sounds awful familiar to 2008.
Right.
2009, where people were living off their home equity.
Well,
right?
And the shocking thing is that refis have spiked through the roof, even with
people
rates.
People with higher rates.
Because they need money.
They need them. They lost their jobs, or their style of living is starting to get challenged a little bit, and they still want to buy the consumer, but they don't have the job to do it. We're not a financially responsible society as a whole.
Duh.
Right?
That's a given.
So all this equity is just turning into paycheck or revenue for people to buy stupid stuff.
Yeah. And right. I just heard a stat from Mike Rowe, the Dirty Jobs guy.
Okay,
He was like, we have like 10 million available jobs and 11 million able-bodied men that just aren't working. Just like, and he goes, I've never seen this before, so I have no precedent to go with what that is.
You see unemployment markets, obviously with REO. We saw that when the mortgage crashed, et cetera, it caused a bunch of ripple effect where companies have laid a bunch of people off. But this is different.
It's very different.
Jobs are available. People don't want to take the jobs,
right?
So are they going to lose their house over getting a job, do you think?
That's just it. I would think so. Well, I've seen what people do in this REO world, and I hate to sound like a cold hearted person. There, at 19 years of doing this, I have felt sorry for one couple, one. And I hear the sob stories. Can I share one of my favorite anecdotes?
Please.
Here's a prime example, which ties into what Donnie's saying. He's like, well, they're going to let their house go. Yeah. Knocked on the door, ready to do cash for keys on his house. In fact, it was in the Peak Vista area, right as the Gem Roads, you know, Ruby Topaz. All okay.
Okay.
So, and it's older brick house, very, very dated. That's not what mattered. Knock on the door. The guy's like, oh, yeah, I've been waiting for somebody like you to, you know, show up, you know, from the bank. And he goes, let me show you around the house. And he's showing me what's broken. You know, it's really, really dated. And he goes, I'm a truck driver. I had some health issues and I had to be home and I was out of work and just, you know, my job. And, you know, and so I'm beginning to feel sorry for the guy.
Right.
Beginning to. And so until we walk into his garage,
oh boy,
and next to the brand new Corvette was a 64 Plymouth Fury convertible that was cherried out. Beautiful car. And he goes, he's like, that's my baby. And I'm like,
you're about to lose your house
with your wife. And I don't know if you have a kid. I'm like, so that's not every American, but that is indicative of how Americans think. They don't put the forest for the tree. I mean, they're not realizing.
Well, and consumerism is alive and well. And again, you can blame a series of things, but social media is a big part. Now it's literally keeping up with the Joneses. But the problem is, it's keeping up with the Joneses on a national scale because now they can see the guy buying the new Corvette. They can see it not just your neighbor buying it, but now you can see your buddy in Chicago who bought the new car, and you've got equity in your home. And you're going, man, I could definitely do that. Like, mm-hmm. I can take that on as mm-hmm. well, right?
Right?
So if they cash in their equity, to your point, you talked about there's more equity in the market than there's ever been, so we shouldn't foreclose, but there's more consumerism and stupid purchases than ever before. So it feels like we're barreling towards the exact same future. How does one find an REO agent like yourself? I mean, you're all mine, just for the record. I'm just kidding. Reach out to Tom. Like, if you're looking to do some REO deals, he's getting them. Have a conversation. We're going to pop up his email address here later on so you can reach out to him. But how does one find the equivalent of you in their local market? Is there a directory of REO agents? How does one chase someone like you down?
There are multiple groups out there. So REO groups are for that REO agents are a part of that. So like the banks and the asset managers will go to those same groups. One that I can recommend is NRBA.com.
Okay.
And that's National REO Brokers Association.
NRBA.
Yeah, I've been with them for 19 years. There, with me doing my research on the banks, I came across this group. I'm like, well, there's a whole group of people that do what I want to do.
Yes.
And so I heard that they fought me for even joining, but I got in anyway. And now they're all gone and I'm still here. So I like that story. You just said a mouthful. I'm done. Okay. But in there you can search by city, state, and those regions. So you can find if there's an REO broker in that area. They're not the only REO brokers. So, you know, if you just look in your, just Google search it, REO broker, Fayetteville, wherever. I'm just saying, pick your town.
Sure.
You will find, because REO agents tend to market that way, or their LinkedIn account at a minimum will say that. So if you type in REO broker Colorado Springs, if my name isn't in the first three, there's something wrong. So it is there. So that's an easy way to do it.
I love that. So go NRBA, look for REO broker in that local town. You're going to find that. Now, Tom, you're obviously dealing with a lot of people who are looking to buy a deal. I was that kid many years ago. I came to you and said, I want to buy a deal. I mean, you're looking to get the sale, but is there a part of you that sees investors who are buying houses that, in your opinion, are just too much for a typical investor? I mean, you got to see all across the gambit on deals, but do you recommend against buying deals, or have you had that conversation with people, or is it purely transactional?
Recommend against buying deals.
Yeah, like if you got a house that just seems like me, for instance, my deal was actually really nice. The house I bought in Seth really nice, right? But have you had clients come to you that are trying to buy something that you felt like they were in over their head? Trying to buy the property?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they don't know what they're doing. And so they need a little more help. I mean, I help them as far along as I can. But if, you know, depending if it's friend, if it's client, if it's both, right. and or you know, it's my job to have to sell that house.
You represent the bank.
So I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be like, oh, you'll make millions off of this. I go through the logistics of and what it would really take. But I always tell them as a caveat, you need to do your own research.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because you got to remember, you're representing the bank, and that was kind of the thing. You're dealing with an REO broker. You got to understand they have to sell the property. Tom is doing his job. The person he represents is the bank, right? So obviously you have buyer's agents out there, not necessarily akin to doing foreclosure flip deals, etc. And then there's, you know, coaches like myself, which is kind of where I was leading that into, who know how to spot a deal and work with it. But the point is, when you go after those REO brokers, you got to remember that they represent the bank's best interest. That's not a negative thing. That's a reality of the person you're dealing with and knowing where they're at. So you got to have that conversation with that in mind. Tom's a good guy. He wants to help. He's going to try to help. He's going to be perfectly honest with you. But that being said, he can't fully promote you not buying the property. Right?
If somebody's itching to buy it, I'm certainly going to let them buy it.
Right.
But they, you know, you need to figure things out too. So you need you need that knowledge, you need that research, you need that coach, you need whatever that might be. But yeah, I think most investors get burned on the first 1 to 3 deals. Not burned, but like, okay, they learn a lot, or they don't make as much as they were hoping. Right. But look how much you just learned in those three deals.
So absolutely.
You do have to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. And that's what I encourage my clients. If we're trying to get to that first deal as a coaching client, I want to make sure they're profitable on that first deal. But I'm also being realistic, right? If you buy a fully trashed REO, in Colorado, I don't think we see them as bad as, say, Chicago. I got to imagine those turn of the century stuff that you're dealing with in the Chicago market out there. That's dilapidated, crazy stuff. Right.
Well, it just comes with the territory. Yeah.
Right. Turn of the century, the way it was built. Here, we don't have as many difficulties, but depending on what market that you're in, you need to know that the REO agent has access to the listings. They're talking to the bank. They got to represent those interests, but they want to see people get hurt. Is it fair in saying that?
Yeah, sure.
Let's talk about financing. You get an offer. The guy wants to throw an FHA or VA or conventional loan. How long does it take before you throw it? Can you physically throw them away now? You like vault shot that into the trash, or what do you do?
Well, don't make me have to admit to those. No, I don't do that. Actually, to be serious, if I see an agent or something write in a normal FHA or VA offer on a home that's falling down, I will have a conversation with that realtor and be like, okay, first of all, it wasn't offered that way in the MLS. So
I was clear on I wanted conventional or cash.
So you missed that part.
Right.
But there are rehab products for both of those loans. There's VA rehab, there's FHA 203K.
Yes.
So can the lender do that kind of loan? Because the bank is just going to say no.
Right.
I don't even have to tell them anything. In fact, the banks rarely ask me for my input. I don't know if you ever knew that. They don't. No, and I saw like, hey, Tom, what do you think? That they'll just be like, no, and they just throw it away.
They flat reject. Yeah. They're not asking consulting from you at all.
No.
I'm actually surprised by that. Why wouldn't your boots on the ground? You know your market.
Sometimes they'll be like, do you have a feel between this particular buyer and this particular buyer? Because the offers are so even.
Similar,
do I love the agent or is it Donnie Corum? You know, I'd have to figure out. No. Is he with it? It was the one time. I didn't mean to burn it down, but
another story, another show.
I'm happy to have a conversation with the buyer or that realtor and be like, here's how you can get this through, but it's not going to happen this way.
Right.
And if they say, put it through the way it is, I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah,
and when it comes back, rejected. And then the agent's mad at me. I'm what do you think I did?
That's going to be the best part. And as is, well, will you fix this or this or that? How many times are you going to say no to that?
No, right. Yeah. So
that's a tough one.
Yeah.
What is the ideal offer? Offer comes in, you got the right financing. Obviously, pricing is important, but what are you looking for before you submit that offer? What's going to make you more likely to push that offer to the top if the bank's asking your opinion at all? But if they're asking, what offers features stand out to you?
Well, for terms, the penultimate is the obvious. Cash, quick close, waive inspection, or any other contingency that it might be on there. Don't say this is contingent upon my wife seeing it next week. I've seen things
that.
Disappoint some folks here. They don't look at wholesale type deals. If you want to put it under contract and then assign it,
right?
Unless you know of some way around it that I don't, they're not going to let you now assign it to a different party or an LLC or something like that.
That change? I mean, it seems like we were doing assignable deals on REOs in the past. Or is that a recent thing?
No, we weren't doing them back then either. So I actually had one where the guy was trying to do that. And he goes, no, you have to close or you need to get out of the deal.
Okay.
And they were just flat out. I mean,
well, that's where transactional funding kicks in, right? So as long as they can close on the deal, they can sell it to somebody else through the assignment thing, but they have to close on it in the title that they're at.
The name that they're at.
HUD is the same way, right? With HUDs, you absolutely positively have to close in whatever entity you agreed to buy it.
Yes.
And if you're going to resell it, you can double, well, title companies don't like the term double closing anymore.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, that's the term you can't use, but basically reselling the property to the end buyer, you don't care as long as the original one closes.
Yeah, right? Let me put a caveat on that,
though,
because what's going to be different this time around than 2009, the major players back in 2009, Fannie, Freddie, HUD, they are not going to be the major players this time around. Smaller banks and or hedge funds.
Yep.
So depending what their bank addendum says,
okay,
maybe you can. Okay. So, and to go to the lower echelon of that, hedge funds are just private money. They have money. They bought some homes. They call me. They'd be like, unload these things. I don't want it. This is just business for them.
Right.
And they don't worry about a public image. Fannie and Freddie and HUD do. They're really, really worried about that. Yep. So, they just want to get the thing gone.
Right.
This is a huge maybe. There's possibly opportunities to sell off market. Possibly.
Okay.
I think I've sold two off market, meaning we didn't go into the MLS, which is very rare. I mean, when it's Fannie, Freddie, and HUD, no, everybody needs to have their equal shot at it. So it goes on the market for, say, 10 days, owner rock only, you know, something like that.
Sure.
Hedge funds, like it may be that they call me with the property 123 Main. And they're like, Tom, we're going to get this on the market in about a month. And if I call them tomorrow and I'd be like,
say, I got a buyer.
Donnie's ready to buy this cash and get this thing off your hands now. What do you want to do? And they may entertain that.
It's
because it's a different set of rules.
And hedge funds are the business of moving money fast.
Exactly.
Right? They're the capital moving business, right?
Yes.
So money sitting is really bad for hedge funds. And as a result, when they bring you in, I think you're right. I think you see a lot more hedge funds being willing to do assignable. They may be just more creative in general. Because that might have been the bank's downfall a little bit, right? Is that they were so rigid, they were so protective of their image.
It just drug the process out.
Right. It took longer and everybody got hurt as a result.
Yeah.
You know? When the hedge funds start foreclosing, I mean, they're giving you a month's worth of advance notice right now.
Oh, no, I'm just giving a rough idea. Yeah.
Right. I saw you had a property at Alexander. Is that still listed? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, that's not an REO, though.
Okay. All right. So, but it's priced below market. I mean, it's a good deal.
Yeah.
But it seemed like it was angled. How do you determine your price? When these hedge funds come in, are they telling you, here's what we want to price it based on market, or are you advising them on pricing?
They ask for a BPO, broker price opinion.
Okay.
And, They want, it's very, very rare that any entity comes back and says, can you adjust your BPO?
Right.
They might be trying to prove something to a higher up or something like that.
Okay.
I hate when they do that because
that's not market.
Now, if they can prove I did something wrong or there was a data error, fine.
Sure.
I'm happy to fix it.
Of course.
I don't want to adjust it just to make somebody happy. If I think it's going to sell at X, that's my opinion of the value.
That's the idea.
So, they don't ever try to bias me. It's very rare that they ever do that. They want to honestly know what I think it's going to, because it's not just comps. It's also what the market's doing.
Right.
Is it going up? Is it going down? Right. Is it flat? So there's all those factors too.
Well, that's why you being a local expert in the field is why these hedge funds, these banks want you, because they want to know it from a local market perspective.
Totally.
They've got an asset that's only theoretical. Are you factoring in repairs into that pricing? Are you?
Oh, guessing? God, yeah. Every time. Okay. Every time. Now, if it's an exterior BPO, I can't.
I don't know.
But usually the outside looks like the inside 9 times out of 10.
Amen to that.
Yeah. So that's a given. Yeah.
So these how much spread do you have on the offer? Offer comes in. Are they right now? Imagine they're not taking wildly lower offers. Was there an era where they were? Was there a time where there was more flexibility in the overall asking price versus acceptance price?
So subjective. You know, there's the unwritten rule that HUD will always take like 12% off or something like that. And so things kind of fall in there, but not always. So it's also time on market.
Mm-hmm.
Time on market begins to drag on the bank client too, and they're just like, we really want to get this thing gone, but they have their increments that they can only drop the price because they have a formula of however they do it.
Right.
And so so I've had plenty over the years, plenty of people come in and say, well, I'm coming in, you know, like $100,000 lower. It's like, no, the key takeaway here is whatever price the bank or hedge fund is at, they think they're at the right price.
Right.
So you're not, unless you can prove it otherwise, like, oh, we didn't know that the roof was caving in.
Sure.
Of course, we know if it's caving in. So we are aware of the repair. So I love the investors who come in and say, well, have you seen the repairs? No, I walked in blind. I don't know. You know, I didn't see anything. I mean, on the BPO form, they ask for a list of repairs.
Of course they do.
I give it to them. I give them a rough, after this many years, I have a rough guess as to what it costs. Yeah. And so the bank is always aware of the condition of the home. Always, 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 unless we didn't get interior access for some reason.
Sure.
Like they're trying to sell it occupied with some squatter. And
sure.
I'm just
sure.
making up something. So, yes, they're always aware. So whether you agree with it or not, or my numbers don't work at that. I'm like, the bank doesn't care what your numbers come at.
Thank you.
The number they're at is where they think it needs to be,
right,
whether you think they're right or wrong. So coming in with crazy low offers is just, it's a waste of everybody's time. I tell people all the time, they're like, hey, would you write this offer for me? I'm like, no. I'm like, so you're not going to send an offer? I'm like, you can go find another agent to write it.
There's a ton of agents willing to write.
I'm not saying you, like no one will ever present your offer. I'm just not going to do it.
I'm going to write it. Right. You're just going to be able to take it and vault it in the trap.
Stop telling them I'm throwing away offers. I don't throw away offers.
You're submitting them. You're submitting them and then
always
throwing them away, right? Legally.
As soon as the bank says toss it, then it can go.
Yeah. Right. He gets a heads up from the bank. We got to get rid of that offer. Yeah. But the takeaway, guys, is writing stupid offers is still stupid, right?
Yeah.
The market hasn't changed to the point where like they want to give stuff away. And there's a good shot it never will. I don't think it's going to get that bad. Even the 08, 09 era, things were cheap.
Yeah.
But they didn't get stupid.
Yeah. Right?
There was a general price we had to follow. And if you're within, like you mentioned, 10 to 12% of the asking price, you've got a shot.
At least you're close. Yeah.
At least you're close. And there's a negotiation. How much room is there after the inspection? Does the bank care? We've done the condition. We found some issues that maybe you didn't know. Does that impact your ability to negotiate much?
That's the good gray area. Finding things that we truly didn't know about. Like, you know, there's plenty of times we don't inspect the furnace. We didn't know that the heat exchanger was cracked or something.
Sure.
So then they'd be like, okay, you know, they always begrudgingly like, okay, what do we got to do to get
through this thing?
They don't always pay for it all. Sometimes they split the cost.
Sure.
It's somewhere in there. But yeah, at that point, they would like to try to keep it going within reason. Or, I mean, if it's so bad, they may just say, look, we're going to get rid of this buyer and then sell it to investors only. Or something like that.
Right.
So I would say that it happens less, but that could happen.
Sure. At some point, you're too much of a hassle.
Correct.
Right? If your buyer's asking for a whole bunch of stuff,
yes.
You know, and I think the key to us getting a lot of REOs done is I understood that matrix, mostly because you beat that into me often. But it was how many times must I tell you the same thing? But you want to have you want to be an easy client to work with. In the end, the banks, the hedge funds, whatever, their goal is ease of transaction,
sure.
Right? So the offer's got to indicate that, like you said, not a bunch of contingencies about your wife seeing it or things I got to fix, yada, yada. I can close quickly because I've got cash, really easy, solid funding, and I'm not going to be a general pain in the ass.
Yes.
Okay? And as long as all those things line up, you got a better shot of getting the deal done.
Right?
At a price within reason to what they were asking.
Yes.
Right?
And one of the biggest things you just brought it up again, had zero contingency, at least in the additional provisions area.
Okay.
Do not, the more you burden that offer, the less they're even going to look at it.
I love that you said that because I tell my clients that all the time, put nothing in there that's not 100% necessary to get the deal done.
Yeah.
Right? We're investors. We're not looking to find ways out. That's a retail buyer mindset.
Like I got
to
find point.
Reasons not to buy the house.
Yeah.
Investors were looking for reasons to buy the house. So the offer's got to reflect that, the desire that we want to get this done. If it's an absolute disaster, there's problems we didn't budget for, et cetera, we might have to get out.
Yep.
But you got to remember, these relationships with REO agents like you, I got to imagine there's got to be agents or clients out there that they call you now, and you're just less likely from past experience to want to deal with that individual again.
If they're not learning from it, put it that way. I'm never going to say no.
A deal's a deal, but you have to understand this is a relationship-based business, right?
Big time.
And you're going to do good business with the people you like to work with, which is why I appreciate all the stuff that we've done over the years. And I thank you for that because we've had a solid relationship. I bought a lot of deals. I intend on helping my clients buy a lot more of the REO deals when they start getting back. Here's the question that I like to ask all my people who come on the show. You ready for this one? Have you hired a business coach for your business at all or brought anybody in to kind of professionally develop your business along the years?
To technically answer that, no, but I'm going to put a caveat and give you a different version of that.
Okay.
No, I've never like called up Tony Robbins and had him be my personal coach. You know, I don't have that kind of money, but Bill Clinton could do it, but that's fine. No, but I did join multiple REO groups where, okay, where the leaders of those groups were my mentors.
Yes.
So I paid to be a member of that group. And okay, through that got a lot, I mean, years of mentorship, even to this day, that's from those guys. Part two, when I opened up my brokerage, okay, CellState, those owners were just gods. They were, oh, they were awesome. Yeah,
I love that.
The what I'd love to add as a cherry on top of that, we had a coach come and teach a huge group of us owners.
Okay.
And with one of the owners meeting that coach, that owner's like, I want to hire you as a coach for a while. So the guy who was a coach to me is hiring another coach. And so that personal improvement, yes, is always needed, always.
I love that.
But I'm just saying, yes, I've had major mentors that were coaches, mm-hmm, just not in the traditional sense.
For sure. Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And do you, obviously, you've been in the REO business for a while. Do you recommend that? Somebody wants to do their first fix and flip, and obviously this is a loaded question for me, but somebody wants to do a fix and flip, would you recommend getting some guidance along the way?
Yes. Always. So that I don't have to do it.
Right? There you go, right? And that's the point. These REO agents want to know that you're coming in with some degree of sophistication, whether you're doing your first deal or not. The fact you're walking in with somebody like myself, yeah, who's done hundreds of these,
yeah,
that also can help the deal to sail through a little bit smoother, right? Because they know that you know what you're doing.
I know that. I know you're not wasting time here.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Anything you want to add, Tom? I want to kind of conclude here. We're about 30 minutes here. So what else can you tell us about the REO market? Run that crystal ball one more time. Tell me what you think is going to happen. And just give us just your general synopsis of what 2023 looks like for the real estate investor market in general, but here specifically.
It's coming. The unique thing that happened last year is I got six former Zillow homes.
Oh,
so
wow.
We all know Zillow kind of goofed
overbought,
up.
With the,
yeah. So one way to do it. So if you look at the history of like, they paid what for this house?
And
I'm just, yeah. And so I got like some of their riffraff homes that they just didn't want. So sold that, I have just one left and it closes in a week.
Okay.
So that was a unique thing to pick
that's
up.
Super, but that's super. That's a hedge fund buyer basically, right?
You could look at it that way, but they just didn't know what they were doing.
Or
their plan failed for whatever.
More money than common sense.
There you go. There you go. So there is that. I got one Freddie Mac last year, and I hadn't had one in 5 years.
Wow.
So I'm just saying, even then, and even now, it's beginning to rear its head here. But I just feel like there's this back pressure log, and it's just waiting to hit. It hasn't hit yet.
Did COVID slow down? Obviously, they had a moratorium on foreclosure for a while.
Sure.
We're still waiting for that wave to hit, right?
That's what I said. Yeah, I began when we began talking. You're probably going to have to go back and
watch the
video. Yeah, I said there's a COVID backlog probably that is that. And on top of what's coming now.
Right.
So when it hits, I think it's going to hit hard. So I would dare to guess by the end of this first quarter, we're going to start seeing something come through.
Is it wrong that I can't wait? I'm getting all tingly and excited right now.
Somebody has to clean up the mess. So that's my motto for me. And then you got to eat it up too. So
right.
you're in the same boat from a different angle.
It's going to be a blast.
Yeah.
I think we had a lot of fun last time, made some great relationships. It was a great time to be in the business for sure. I know it's disappointing when people are losing their homes and people get upset that I'm celebrating that, but they're going to anyway.
They're going to anyway. That's why I said somebody has to clean it up.
We might as well be there to help out as best we can, right? And
then
make a difference in those people's lives and obviously help other people learn how to invest in those deals that are coming. So I can't wait. I'm excited to do more business with you this year.
Oh, it's coming.
Let's make sure that happens. Guys, we're going to conclude with that. Listen, if you want to get involved in the real estate investing market, you understand it's a relationship-based business. I'm honored to call Tom a good friend and a business associate, but this is one of the many things we can offer with the coaching. REO agents all across the country want to work with sophisticated investors like myself and like my clients. And if you want to join into that, now's a good time to start establishing those relationships and or get into coaching, because let's face it, the deals are coming. And unless you get out in front of it, you're going to miss out on that. So with that, I just want to thank you once again, Tom, for coming on the show. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Hope to have you on when things get really crazy.
I was going to say, let's do it again about 8 to 10 months and see where we're at.
Summertime, fall, let's get back in and see where we're at, because I think it's going to be incredible. With that, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. This is Donnie Corum with Tom Lazzaro reminding you once again, don't buy a house, buy a deal.
Thank you for tuning in to the Foreclosure Deals Coach podcast. If you like what you heard here today, remember, new episodes are uploaded weekly. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. Do you want more of the Foreclosure Deals Coach? Are you ready to learn the mindset, tactics, and tools required to be a successful real estate investor? If so, click the link below to schedule a one-on-one coaching call today with Donnie Corum, the Foreclosure Deals Coach, to determine if coaching is right for you. And remember, don't buy a house, buy a deal.